This is Twit.
All right, let's start things off talking about Apple. This is like the week of Apple reviews.
Yes.
And when I thought about the peak performance event and the reviews that were, you know, kind of streaming in throughout the week, I thought, yes, we're used to hearing about, you know, the M1 Ultra and the Mac Studio and the Studio Display. All those things seem to get a lot of the headlines and a lot of the publicity from the event. But then we also have some other hardware, which I would say in many ways, device like the iPhone SE is actually pretty darn important in the grand scheme of what Apple's doing. And so today, joining us to talk about his review of the iPhone SE is Jeffrey Fowler from The Washington Post. Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Hello, hello, hello.
It's awesome to get you back. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a while. First of all, before we kind of jump into this, not everybody has $1,000 to spend on a smartphone, even though at this point, this day and age, it feels like all of the premium smartphones, they're $1,000, maybe they're even a little bit more than that. So it's easy in the tech, like the tech fanatic sphere or the tech journalist sphere, to think that those are the phones that matter. But is it safe to say that the iPhone SE is actually really important to what Apple does because of its lower price point? What do you think about that?
Hugely important. So I write for the Washington Post. Most of my readers are not among the tech enthusiast set. They are ordinary folks, people's, you know, uncles and aunts and grandmas, all of whom now need a phone to do the things in their life too. And they don't have $1,000 to spend on a new device, or even $1,500, what some of these phones cost now. And they're actually scratching their heads a little bit why they ought to cost that much. We've had phones, smartphones around for well over a decade now, and the price keeps going up on them, even though the innovation and the new stuff that it does for you isn't really going up. As we know with technology, things should get cheaper over time, right? Because you're able to squeeze the margins, and figure it out. So that's definitely not happening in smartphones. So anytime Apple is willing to put out a device that costs a phone, something as important as an iPhone that costs only $430, that's going to make a big impact on people.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, this year especially, you know, with some of the changes that we're going to talk about in the next few minutes, it's not like this device is a slouch, right? And I mean, and actually, this isn't the only example of this, right? Google's been doing this with their Pixel A series, making some pretty formidable phones in this same price category. So I feel like now more than ever, this like $400, $500, $600 price range is more competitive than it's ever been. You're actually getting a very compelling device in that price category, whereas before, you might have to make some serious trade-offs, and that seems to be the case here. Where do you stand on the design debate? Because I've seen some people in their reviews say, you know, this is the classic iPhone look, and then others say it's a very dated iPhone look. Where do you stand on that debate?
You know, to me, it looks almost exactly like the iPhone 7. Do you remember the iPhone 7 with that piano black finish that was so smooth and it felt like a pebble in your hand? This is really similar to that. And some people love that. Some people still love the home button. I mean, until earlier this week, it was still the most convenient way to unlock an iPhone while you were wearing a mask.
Yeah, it's true.
So I think there's plenty of reason to like it, and frankly wish that Apple would, you know, use that technology that exists to put the fingerprint reader on your screen to put it into their high-end phones too. So I'm here for the folks that still want a home button and a fingerprint reader. I have to say, for me, as someone who's been using one of the sort of more squared off iPhone designs that we've had since the 12 and the 13, it does feel here in my hand a little bit slippery. Like I found that I kept like, whoops, going out of my hand while I was using it. But, you know, again, that's just something you get used to over time.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people are throwing cases on these devices anyways. So at least that's me. If I don't throw a case on, it's destined to hit the floor. Let's talk a little bit about, I think one of the biggest upgrades here is the chip inside, which is the same chip that you can find even in the top of the line iPhones, the iPhone 13. I realize it's the same chip and we get, you know, perhaps the same performance, but when you're talking about a smaller phone that has different, you know, sizes of battery and, you know, is using the device differently on a smaller scale versus the large scale premium device, are you actually getting better performance out of a device of this size? What has been your experience with the chipset?
I haven't found that I'm that there's sort of a noticeable difference. I mean, one of the challenges that Apple faces here is they always, you know, really talk up their chip improvements in the iPhone. But for the last couple of generations, it's become really hard for most people to really tell the difference, unless you're doing some very, you know, sort of intense and specific gaming kinds of things. Right. And frankly, that's not what the people who are using or going to buy an iPhone SE are doing. For me, the biggest and most important thing about that chip being in this phone is that means that this phone can last longer. And that's a big key thing for folks who, you know, who this is a strain on their budget to buy a new iPhone. They want one that's going to last them, you know, 5-6 years. And the news here is that this one might, at least in terms of the chip, even if the battery might not last that long. And I know we'll get to the battery in a few minutes. So that to me is the most important part of having that chip.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the battery now. And you actually mention in your article that, like, replacing that battery, even when you get to that point, I mean, it's not that expensive. It's like, what, $49, something like that. So the idea of, and mind you, I'm on Android, the idea of having a device, being able to be relatively confident that this thing's going to last you 6 or 7 years, maybe you spend $49 to replace the battery. Like, I'm pretty jealous of that, to be completely honest. That's pretty great. How does the battery perform?
So this is where we get the sad trombone sound effect of this review. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I had a lot of difficulty getting it to last more than 12 hours.
Ooh.
You know, I'd wake up in the morning and start using the phone, and, you know, not even necessarily that taxing. I know when some reviewers really hammer these phones, you know, that can be sort of an unnatural use experience. So I really kept that in mind with how I was using the phone. You know, FaceTime with mom a little bit, take a couple of photos, answer some emails, but it was usually dead or dying by 6 or 7 p.m. So that is not great. And that's even after Apple says that versus the previous generation of the SE, which came out 2 years ago, they changed the battery chemistry. Mm. And of course, that new chip is also supposed to be more power efficient. Now, Apple claims that it'll go 2 hours longer than the previous generation SE, which was also known to be kind of a disappointing battery life phone. I think it's really, really, really going to depend a lot on the 5G coverage in your neighborhood. I live in the middle of San Francisco, and I have AT&T service on this phone, and AT&T's 5G service in the middle of San Francisco is terrible. So I think one of the things that's going on with the poor battery life on this phone is that it has to use more power to try to reach that signal, you know, when I make a phone call to somebody, and that is draining the power faster throughout the day. The problem is lots of Americans are in the exact same position as I am, that they don't have good 5G coverage where they are. And so it is going to be a drain on the phone, even though Apple has put some technology into iOS that supposedly should, like, switch off the 5G when it's not useful for you. I just didn't find that it was helping me here.
Interesting. Yeah, that's important to know. Although, you know, nice to know that this device actually does support 5G. But as with anything with 5G, really, it has yet to be proven to be anything more than your results, you know, may vary. Your mileage may vary. You really never know kind of what kind of coverage you're going to have wherever you happen to be, how your device actually manages that. And I know this device doesn't support all bands of 5G, right?
That's correct. You know, after any Apple product launch, I feel like one thing that journalists do and can do to be of service is to say, like, okay, the things that they didn't mention, and you need to understand them as well. And one of the things that Apple didn't mention is that this device does not support millimeter wave. So that's the fastest band that particularly Verizon has really invested a lot in. So it can't connect to that. But, you know, frankly, so far, that's in, you know, busy downtown corridors and, you know, stadiums and that kind of stuff. And so of no use to me here. Another thing that they didn't mention is that although this phone has access to all of this, most of the same photo processing capabilities as as the top of the line iPhone 13, it doesn't have access to what's the most important one, and that's night mode. So the camera on this phone can feel very dated and very limited as soon as you get in slightly dark situations.
Yeah, that's a challenge. We've gotten very used to these, like, really powerful night modes, really kind of solving this legacy issue of low light mode, and it's just gotten so much better and so much better. So it's hard to step back when you don't have that. Overall verdict, like obviously this is the right phone for a certain user. What's your verdict on this?
Yeah, if you have low expectations for and low needs for what you're going to use a phone for, then you're going to meet them with this phone, and you should go ahead and buy it. But you should go in knowing what it is that you're not going to get. And if you don't care about those things, if you're if you actually one of these people that turns off their phone during the day when they're not using it, I know a lot of folks do that. Then great. The battery life won't be a problem. If you're not, trying to be Ansel Adams, taking cool night photos, you're going to be just fine. But you should definitely know what you're not getting, and also what the trade-offs come from sort of furthering yourself in that Apple ecosystem, because the phone itself might cost $429, but Apple now has more and more ways to try to extract money out of you.
Oh, yeah.
for services, including ads that litter, all over the iOS screens for things like iCloud and Apple News and all these other sorts of things, so they can make money from you.
Yep. Yes, indeed. I get more and more used to things like that. So, well, thank you for hopping on with us today, Jeffrey Fowler. Always have a lot of fun talking with you, and I really enjoy your work on the Washington Post. So everybody should read it, WashingtonPost.com. If people want to follow you online, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Jeffrey Fowler with a G like the giraffe from Toys R Us of our youth.
If you can remember Toys R Us at this point.
Fondly.
I do.
Fondly.
I'll never forget.
Fondly.
Yes, fondly. Exactly.
I used to have a Jeffrey the giraffe mascot.
Right on. Thank
now
you.
Now you got me.
Now yeah. I got you.
There you go. Thank you so much again. We'll talk with you soon. Take care.
Take care.